One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Bonjour and welcome to the Backlash Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture. Join my darling boy, Michael Hamblett from What Culture, to review everything that happened at Backlash France. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. AEW Dynamite, AEW Collision, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete. The bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamflett. Get well soon to Michael Sidgwick. We're here to review Backlash, a show that had some great matches on it. But let's be honest, it was all about the crowd.
Oh, yeah. If Dr. Fed could get his stethoscope out right now, I'd assume he'd hold it to Michael Sidgwick's chest and just assume he's got a case of Fed fever. Because he's probably watched Backlash and caught up on the action. I wouldn't like to speak on his behalf, so I'm sure he'll take some time on the Dynamite preview if he's back in tomorrow to tell you how he all thought. Needless to say, what a night. Yeah. What a great night. At this point, obviously, we're recording this a little bit later. We'll explain to anyone that doesn't know that in the UK there's a bank holiday that falls in. There's two that fall in bank holiday. I mean, there's two that fall in May. And one of them obviously fell over this weekend, so we haven't had a chance to preview it any earlier. We're reviewing this after Raw, also after dinner. And I had, do you know what I had for my lunch today?
I saw the drink that you had.
Yeah, I had a bottle of toxic waste lime and lemon soda.
How old are you?
39, as of last week. And a pack of...
Go on.
And a pack of Gumsy's jelly burgers. They're goated. I got the Nicholas some. Like, they made the office smell great. I'm full and I'm on a sugar crash, basically. Which is the worst position to be in when you want to spend your time putting over how this was like an all-timer show for the atmosphere. This was, in terms of, the ambiance.
Oh.
An all-timer.
Yeah. Best WWE crowd ever?
It's got to be up there.
It's up there, isn't it?
Yeah, like when you've enjoyed as much WWE as I have, it's like you hesitate to go, yeah, best ever. Despite the fact that like you're kind of only rewarded for like takes like that now. It's got to be the best of the worst of all time. But it felt top five, earnestly felt like I'd have to sit down and come up with other crowds that compare. Interestingly enough, one of them is last year's Backlash.
I was going to say, Backlash, whoever gets it next year, it's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure next month. And I was talking to Josh Brown of What Culture Gaming. Check out their podcasts, wherever you get them. And he was saying, through a couple of tweets he'd seen online, he stuck on Backlash. And he was asking about the crowds and how it's come to be that WWE could be in France. And I was just explaining what started off as quite an impressive bit of creativity meets capitalism, where they would go where there was TV deals needed ironing out, and it was like, have this amazing live show to show what you're getting. Now it's become almost like an expectation of these B shows, isn't it? Like they're going to be in places where wrestlers are from, or they're going to be in places that typically haven't had a lot of the big pay-per-views over the decades. And it elevates them. If nothing else, these 4, 5, 6 match shows that save a bunch of title matches, save a bunch of big wrestlers, live long in the memory for the moments they create. And I think that's WWE more than anything else. Like, WWE will obviously ideally want you to remember certain matches, and there's one on this card I cannot wait to talk about. But ultimately, they want you to remember the feeling that those big moments gave you. And we, for 12 months, have spoken about Bad Bunny versus Damian Priest as a perfect example for this show. I've spoken about that match and that entrance and just the vibe as Bad Bunny was out there like contesting this match, like in front of that like insane Puerto Rico crowd, Zelina Vega as well.
Yeah.
The memories that left made you think, oh, well, this is the peak of this international B-show genre. And that's now been taken by Glass Rangers. Like, it's thrown the gauntlet out to Glasgow. I saw people tweeting about how they were going to be going to the Hydro, and it's this sort of like, oh, we've got to be the best now. We've got to, come on, Glasgow, let's make sure we're as loud as France. And that couldn't be any better for WWE, could it? Like, they've got crowds competing to be the loudest at their live shows. That's, I mean, sometimes Triple H needs a kick in the arse for some of the cards he produces on paper.
Sometimes he recognises there's only one real wrestling journalist, of course, but... I'm joking!
Not touching that. Unlike Triple H, sometimes I will know when and when not to speak. But yeah, a pig's ear of that one, didn't you, Paul? What a dumbass. But a really incredible show. The kind of show where it is almost impossible to spoil your reputation in a press conference. Almost impossible.
Yeah, I said going in, it looked a predictable card, but predictable isn't always bad. We saw that Elimination Chamber. We definitely saw it here. You know, there's no result really on this card that you thought, oh, wasn't expecting that.
No.
And yet, I had a whale of a time, and it was done and dusted way before bedtime for us.
Yeah, on that, like, I'm not going to kick the hornet's nest that was the Elimination Chamber discourse, because I got stung for that at the time. But I understand people's criticisms of the pacing of these shows, and did, like, Leon just not pay up for ad space or something, because this just was a pay-per-view that, or premium live event that promoted the matches, delivered the matches and got off the air.
Yeah.
There was no fat on this. Like, there was a video package before each match, as you would expect.
Yeah.
There was no obvious ad break-ins for the Peacock airing of the PLE. I don't know if that's, again, because of where it was based or because of the time it was airing. I have no idea on any of that. But it's the comfortably the best-paced Triple H era B show that I can remember. Mm. Comfortably. Much closer to the takeover format that used to suit this, like, 5-6 match structure that he likes. So yeah, a couple of big wins for WWE on this one before the game made a massive loser of himself. And a couple of matches on this card that I think one's going to be in the conversation, but even if they're not in conversation for match of the year at the end of the year, they're going to be these individual wrestlers. They're going to be in their high points.
Yes.
And not just for the year, probably career.
I will get onto the matches in a second. Mm. I just want to quickly circle back and mention the French fans stealing the show, effectively. What was your favourite French fans thing? Was it un deux, simplement deux?
Yeah.
I really liked This Is Awesome.
Right.
I really liked, I think it was on the SmackDown before, my brain's all over the place.
Yeah.
For some reason, a count-out tease with Set, Wheat. No, I don't know why I got me so hyped for that. Or is it just simply Jey Uso?
It's Jey Uso. It's phenomenal being a party song in France to such an extent that did they pick AJ Styles for that more than they picked him because he'd be a solid hand for Cody Rhodes' first title defense?
Il est vraiment phenomenal, la 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 la.
Incredible. Loved it every time. Loved it every single
time. How he didn't even pop when he was doing his pose at the beginning. Il est vraiment phenomenal. La, 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 la. They did it.
Sort of stunning pronunciation until it's not that. Yeah. I can't, I'd give it an A in French speaking and listening.
Oh, merci.
But then I'd say, don't repeat it because
merci.
I want to give you this A.
Yeah. Merci, please.
I love that. What I love about any crowd is the ability to sort of organize themselves in such short order. So that AJ Styles song, quickly, it's a song you could hear different sections of the song coming from different areas of the building, and it was an echoey room because it was so loud. And no, they were all just together in unison. The two counts, as you say, just together in unison. The complete and total silence when Mega Glove came out, complete and total unison. That crowd got everything right.
They to get onto this first match, the Bloodline versus Randy Orton and Kevin Owens, which was immediately made into a street fight.
Yeah.
Which I sort of anticipated would be for the benefit of the match, and it certainly was. Randy Orton's a legend, but it's rare you get that amount of people singing his theme. Cody's, it isn't a surprise that it's a deafening response to the, whoa. But word for word.
Did I hear voices in my head? Or was it actually a French crowd singing Randy Orton out to the ring? I love as well when the wrestlers look like they can't believe it. And Kevin Owens and Randy Orton in that extended entrance. And dream card for me, there was loads of extended entrances here. Because all the wrestlers were soaking up every moment of this crowd. And WWE were right to produce it as such as well. This opening match, it couldn't have been arranged, produced any better than it was. In that, whatever the expectations were, and I'd say in-ring-wise, they were quite low.
Yeah.
The jury's out on Solo Sikoa. Tama Tonga had real flashes in New Japan, but I don't think, you know, let's not pretend that they've signed a work rate darling in Tama Tonga. So to promote it as a tag team, a straight up tag team match, and thus measure people's expectations, and then agent a brawl so realistic and believable that it caused the security, that it caused SmackDown GM, can't remember his name, to walk out and change the stipulation straight away. We've talked about this before. Chaos in wrestling is actually quite hard to manufacture.
Yeah.
It's one of the more low-key, difficult jobs when you're producing a segment to make it feel like it isn't just something you've seen a million times before. Even pull-aparts, you know, when the two guys get the corner, get a corner each, and you almost feel like your Bully Ray counting down to when they get the table, when they're going to like jump into each other again. The rhythms of those have been sort of overused and bastardized. This was not that. Like, you saw them brawling. They split off, obviously, which teams do. But you'd never even considered just how much Kevin Owens and Randy Orton would have been desperate to get their hands. Like, it's that old thing, isn't it? A lockup wouldn't have really made sense. And they just extended that out to like, well, let's just make it the whole match. So when the fans got that announcement from the SmackDown GM, can't remember his name, it was as if they were being given an extra, like, free gift. And it wasn't. It was just, well, this is the trick we're going to play to make the match good. But they said, I was already hyped, and now I'm getting this as well. It's inspired, sort of an inspired choice, especially because they were opening.
I was going to say, there's a lot of pressure on this match because it was the opening, because it was Tama's in-ring debut for WWE, because of all the moving parts that came with it, and arguably because it's like, okay, a bloodline street fight with where anything goes. Yeah, it's quite a good one, though. It's quite recently a version of that, basically.
Never even thought of that. But to your point, sort of, there's been kind of some really bad ones as well. Like Tribal Combat stunk at SummerSlam. And I loved the last 3 minutes of the Usos solo and Roman match as much as I didn't like the prior 17, like at Money in the Bank. I can see you burning.
Disagree, but it's one of the best nights of my life, that.
I know. So does Nicholas. We're in a club till 4 a.m. But like the match itself was pretty drab for 17 minutes. And then, oh my God.
I'm a dog. I remember the last part. That was it.
But this was none of that, really. This was just a really, really spirited and well-intended weapons brawl. They were just... Kevin Owens is great in this environment. Obviously, like a fantastic improviser. So that prime display getting lobbed all over in this never-ending bit of lore between Kevin Owens and Logan Paul. And it's just... It's great. When he, like... punches that prime bottle or spits on it. I think of you doing that, like, that's great, give it to your kids. So I have to like leap in and go, no, 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 don't do that. Like, I feel like Kevin Owens is speaking for me when he does that. So that was great. Tama Tonga looking as violent as he did was ideal because that's been the whole point of the new bloodline. It's just violence first, fighting first from Solo Sikoa. It's a very knowingly unsubtle new bloodline. Paul Heyman can only sell fear of the actions and consequences if the actions and consequences are scary. So that's why this match played out as it did.
Lovely moment on, was it SmackDown? Yeah, it must have been SmackDown with Jay and Heyman.
That was on Backlash.
Oh, it was on Backlash. Yeah,
Backlash, yeah. So it was before Jey Uso's match and after, obviously,
crossed paths, didn't
the
they?
Reveal
yeah.
of what we got with the new Bloodline member. So we'll get to that, I suppose. Tama Tonga in general had a great night because when he was on, when he was having a sell, it was more about what he was surviving. So you were seeing a guy that has instantly come in and is prepared to die for the cause.
Yes.
Basically. So like that was when you had a, when you knew, I say had a feeling, when you knew the Bloodline were going to win, it was like, well, how close can they get you to thinking that this might go horribly wrong for the brand new act? And obviously what you got was the Tangaloa reveal executed by WWE at the perfect time, executed by Tangaloa. Not so effectively when you see the camera from around the side.
Good work from the ref.
Yeah. When he, so Tangaloa, if you haven't seen it, comes out from under the ring as a surprise Bloodline guy, pulls the ref out at a certain three count. Kevin Owens on Tama Tonga.
Was it not after the they called it a brain, like Fisherman's Buster, brain buster off the top through the chairs that had been set up, which was set up brilliantly by him hitting him with the chair and then putting it in position, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right, yeah, he would hit.
Such a brilliant sequence.
Line him up on six chairs, making a makeshift table, and before he set up each one, he was smashing him in the back with it. my youngest son was watching this with me at one point, and again, just for a split second, I thought, this might get you into wrestling. I can just pretend that the crowds are hot every week.
Yeah.
I can pretend that there's a brainbuster through the chair in every single match. And I was like, I'm going to have to make you watch 2021 Dynamite instead. Like, for either of those things.
Yeah.
The Tangaloa reveal, let's talk about that a little bit, right? I am all for having just wrote 12,000 words on the WWE history of the bloodline.
Now, where can I read that?
Whatcoach.com/WWE. And there'll be a video coming soon as well if you just want to listen to it. Basically, effectively, it's a podcast. I'm all for bringing in anybody from that enormous flowchart that The Rock put up in Las Vegas, or indeed anybody loosely related to the bloodline for numbers, for like having sort of that believable domination on SmackDown. There was only so long that Solo and Tama could be two guys trying to look like they basically ran the show. So whenever you sort of have that strength in numbers, I'm all for it. And I think that's what Tangaloa offers. I think this is not a net negative just because Tangaloa is kind of a boring wrestler, right?
And I was like, what's Camacho doing back in WWE?
And this is it, right? It's because Triple H has an unwavering loyalty to the people that wrestled on Black and Gold NXT even once, it would appear. Yeah, where's his little bike? You know, like... Look, Tangaloa went off and had a completely different career in New Japan. Guerrillas of Destiny had some aura. I think some people pitching the Usos versus Guerrillas of Destiny maybe don't know what they're asking for, but it's a match you should do. For the match graphic, maybe not for when the bell rings, I don't know. But the strength in numbers element of the bloodline, the idea that they are mining family members as Solo embarks on this brave new chapter for the bloodline, the fact that Jacob Fatu still to come.
Yes, that's like, the other part of it.
They've kind of left that bullet in the chamber for the time being. And knowing that now, because when you see that somebody's pulled the ref away, you expect to see Jacob Fatu, don't you?
Exactly, yeah.
Oh my God, it's Tangaloa. So the fact they've been able to hold on to that one means that now more and more people can anticipate it for the day that he does show up. And when he does show up, it's surely to just cause absolute chaos and carnage and all that sort of thing. So they've bought themselves more time for the Jacob Fatu reveal. They've bought themselves... what, X amount more months of the bloodline being more dominant? I'm not saying it doesn't matter that Tangaloa is not very good. What I'm saying is I don't think it matters right now.
No.
I think down the line, like, you're supposed to think, Solo might win the world title. The Gorillas might win the tag titles. These, in the same way that Roman and the Usos did, they're not on their level. And it's good to measure those expectations. But this match was a smoke and mirrors triumph.
Yes.
So who's to say you can't do that a bit longer with these bloodline matches?
Exactly. You're mentally building a War Games thing already, obviously, off the back of this.
I can't. Did you hear the We Want Roman chants on SmackDown?
I did.
I cannot wait for babyface bloodline. Like Roman and the Usos. I cannot wait. Roman Reigns just sort of having to stare upon like what has happened in his absence and just sort of like, and like Jimmy. Right.
Yeet.
Yeah. And doing that, like, or like wearing the glasses, or like, and Sami Zayn giving us some popcorn. He's like, all right, I'm in. I can't.
Yeah.
What was that? I said a million times before, if there's one thing better than people half killing each other during a fu-ed, it's people making friends afterwards out of mutual respect. It's even better.
Yeah.
It's even better than the fighting. Wardlow sliding the ring of Punk is as good as the blood feud that came before it.
Just imagine it with the Jacob Fatu side of things. I don't know why, but I'm picturing when Seth Rollins was like, finally, I'm going to get my hands on Triple H, and then Samoa Joe just came in and trucked him out of nowhere. Do that with Jacob Fatu. Look, you saw what he did to that fan back in the day.
God, yeah. No, that's spot on as well. Somebody like Solo Sikoa appears like he's got
no people left.
He's solo, in fact. And then bang, Jacob Fatu. Yeah, there's always an extra sort of weapon because this family is so big and vast and there's so many people that can help
out. It's a strong start for them as well in terms of, oh God, if Kevin Owens and Randy Orton can't stop them, now what? Who are they going to have to recruit to try and balance things out if they want to run this one on?
And that's the point of all of this, ultimately. Yeah. Like you establish, like you had that with the Judgment Day running Raw in inverted commas in 2023, they could lose those tag matches almost every week, but there was this gang mentality where they would like theoretically outnumber Cody Rhodes plus one. So it was like, how are the good guys going to get out of this jam? And then you got like what, a year's worth of TV out of that. They can probably do that again. With the bloodline on SmackDown,
great opener, followed by another deafening end. Well, various deafening entrances, I should say. The obvious one being the hey Bayley, which is still just all over Europe, basically.
It makes you feel good. It makes you feel arrogant that maybe like your continent's got the best taste because nobody in Europe evidently ever gave up on Bailey, and now she's actually back as a baby face. She doesn't need to try and like shut the chance down in the first 5 minutes of the match.
Bailey defending, of course, against Naomi, who got a great reaction as well, and Tiffany Stratton, who again just looked fantastic in there.
En français, who was like Tiffany's main benefactor? Who would like sort of provide her with her sort of financial resources when she first arrived on NXT?
Papa,
okay, Nicole.
Funny spot with Naomi wiggling a bum on Tiffany Stratton's head before she smashed her head into the edge of the ring apron.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go through all the play by play of all the matches because and hopefully people have already seen it. And if you haven't, go and watch it. It's well worth 3 hours of your time. Double prettiest moonsault ever, at least an attempt at a double prettiest moonsault ever.
Yeah.
Leads to a 1D.
Amazing.
From Naomi and Bailey.
Commentators picked up the reference as well. Yeah.
In the end, Bailey pins Naomi, reversing a cradle to win. Nice show of sportsmanship afterwards. Mm-hmm. Right result?
Yeah. We talked about this, didn't we? That, like, they kind of have used... They're getting a bit too cute with it, I think, with the sort of DQ finishes or the run-ins or whatnot for these triple threat builds. They've just done it on Raw with Sammy and Chad and Bronson Reed, but they saved the Naomi pinfall loss for here, didn't they? Tiffany Stratton couldn't have lost. Bailey certainly couldn't have lost in her first title defense, so it had to be Naomi here, but as you say, the sportsmanship after the fact, like, got them out of it, really, because it sort of made you think, well, Naomi's lost, she doesn't mind, she'll go back to the undercard and try and work her way back up the rankings, where you were led to believe, obviously, Tiffany Stratton maybe won't be so happy about that, and another day will come for her, and so it should, because this is the second, she didn't work WrestleMania, so for her, this is the second PLE in a row where she has absolutely stood out as somebody that they need to strap the rocket to when the time is right. That time might not be right now, but...
Money in the bank soon.
Yeah, physically, she has got all the tools to carry a bunch of stories that don't necessarily circulate around the title, and you are allowed to do that, WWE, with the women's division, if you want. Like, her carrying around that briefcase, and in the meantime, getting into feuds with other wrestlers, it's perfect, because all you're going to see is more good Tiffany Stratton in-ring to make you buy the prospect of her being a champion. And then she's carrying around this golden ticket. Well, it'll be pink by then, won't it? But she'll be carrying around this briefcase waiting for the moment to strike. And by the time she wins the belt, it's going to be a lot like when Edge cashed in that somebody already feels credible enough to have the belt. They're just a bit of an uncrowned champion. Doing it here would have been a rush job.
Yes.
But she is working to the level. The moments of hesitation that might have, like, every now and then clouded a couple of matches in NXT have completely gone. There's just such unbelievable snap to the stuff she's doing. Bailey, as the sort of general tying this one together, put in, I thought, quite a noble, understated performance. She didn't take much of the match for her. If you watch it back, she was willing to sell. She was willing to look like the title's constantly slipping away from her, and then would just be opportunistic and experienced. And there's no shame in that. You're the veteran in this. But it was quite typical of Bailey. It was quite a selfless performance, I thought, in terms of how they laid the match out, to give so much to Tiffany, who's on the come up, and so much to Naomi, who they knew was going to be losing. So again, like, a boring bit of analysis, but, like, well done, the agents.
Yeah.
Les agents of this one, because I thought they absolutely nailed this.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Bit Before we go any further, though, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, we all carry around different stressors. They can be big life worries or just, you know, little things like your favorite wrestler not being used properly. The thing is, when we keep them bottled up, it really can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. It is really helpful too for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. Therapy basically empowers you to be the best version of yourself. So why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and best of all, suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/whatculture today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/whatculture. Let's move on to the World Heavyweight Championship match. I mean, how many times am I going to say that Jey Uso entrance is going to live long in the memory? But that shot that everyone's been sharing is incredible. They was doing something at the basketball as well, weren't they, with the Jey Uso Yeet thing just the other day. But yeah, it's sticking with Lyon.
Yeet.
It was like, they did that, and you're like, okay, well done, we've done the Yeet thing. And then, like, he's like, okay, this side, the match starts. And he's like, okay, this side, Yeet. This side, Yeet. And then he's like, and the entrance, right, Yeet as well. Why would you so
not?
Good.
Why would you not if you were Jey Uso at this point? Andy Murray tweeted this, but I think he said he'd seen it, somebody else tweeting it, so I don't think he's trying to claim a take, and it's takeception. Hacksaw Jay Duggan. Like, the man is a Rubik's Cube for purists at this point, because smart take-havers like myself, saying it simply does not matter, this man does not have the matches, because he doesn't, right? I think at this point there's too much evidence stacking up to say it as a singles wrestler. Much to my sadness, by the way, because when he got switched to Raw, I was mega excited for the main event Jey Uso singles run, and the matches have just never materialized like yet. I think this is his best singles match ever, this Damian Priest one. And again, I was chatting with Murray about this morning, and he proposed the Gunther one from Raw, and I remember specifically being disappointed by it. I remember thinking that this is low on the Gunther scale, maybe high on the Jey scale, but that's a pretty low scale. Obviously, I think WrestleMania is going to cast a shadow over the Usos for quite a while, which isn't fair on them as a team, but that's for them to fix when they become a tag team again.
More time.
Wait. Anyway, so this I would say is Uso's best ever singles match, because it does matter how that crowd responds here. And the Jim Duggan comparison made, because Jim Duggan would shout a big noise and everybody would go nuts for it. And then it didn't matter that, like, by WWE at least, I'm not talking about like his Mid-South work, but by WWE, it wasn't really about how the matches played out.
Yeah.
It was just about people wanted to go and shout, ho, oh, and cheer with USA when Jim Duggan did anything.
Yes.
That's Jey Uso, right? People want to say yeet and yeet. Do that. Like, I want to pay to be in buildings to do that.
You're encouraging Josh Brown to get a ticket.
Yeah. Like, the man loves Glasgow, and I was like, well, go to Glasgow and watch Jey Uso do that and then get yourself away. Like, because the bell's going to ring and you've gone off him unless he wins. And then if he wins, it's great because you get to go yeet and do it even more so.
I thought they laid the match out brilliantly as well in terms of, because we were sort of speculating on how this was going to work with, it's Priest slowly turning babyface, but he's not a fully fledged heel, and it'd be weird to suddenly switch up like that in the middle of a match. And I just really like the, like, him suddenly being like, oh, I'm in control. Wait a second, why is JD McDonagh out here? What are you doing? And then obviously Finn's involvement as well, and the near falls off the back of that, and like him still fighting, Jey Uso fighting against all the odds, super kicking off the apron, and then looking like he might have the match won, sets up for a big splash, and then got caught with the super chokes, South of Heaven choke slam. I should mention as well the foot on the ropes, because arguably Jey Uso had that match won.
Yeah, they played with that quite well, considering on Raw they were always going to keep, like, the Judgment Day are fraying, but they've not kind of like completely been torn apart just yet by this. So considering how physical it got with Damian Priest, you were thinking this could explode on Raw.
I could easily have seen them open. I mean, we're doing this the wrong way around. We've done the Raw review already. What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from, of course. But I thought there was a chance as well that Priest could just come out and, being the honourable babyface that he's slowly becoming, say, yeah, I've watched it back and you might have had me beat, so you know what, let's run it back at King of the Ring, for example.
I thought that. I think we talked about that in the office, didn't we? I thought there might be another match in this. I still think there could be. I don't know that Jey Uso makes the final of the King of the Ring, and considering that he's just beaten a Judgment Day guy, could they play a part in him getting eliminated and then that set up a rematch in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
I don't know. They're getting a positive from this. They're getting the South of Heaven over. As a, like that, it's going to help when you've cashed in to win the belt and you do a good one at WrestleMania like you did.
Oh, huge.
But they're getting that over as this as a proper kill shot for Damian Priest, and that doesn't hurt. Your babyface needs one like that for the big cheers and stuff. This match was like, again, I think there's a lot about Jey Uso, and it's only beneficial. As soon as Jey Uso match finishes, it's like Will Smith pops up and does the big red laser on all of us so that we've forgotten it in time for the next time he enters and everybody goes nuts. And then you see social media is such, it is and it isn't an important part of pro wrestling in 2024 because, like, it's a lens on pop culture. Like, you follow a count, it's completely curated, your timeline looks like yours. So in one sense, it's a total bubble. And in the other, the numbers sort of don't lie. If something is being shared, if other than the bot accounts, you know, and I don't think the ones that are advertising nudes in bio particularly care what Jey Uso does in his matches. Like, other than those replies, those shares, all that sort of thing, are people just like bang, bang into this? And that's not going anywhere for Jey Uso. No. You wouldn't have seen, if people that haven't watched the show but are listening to this podcast haven't seen the PLE, one of the few things I'll have seen will have been Jey Uso's entrance, will have been like every reaction to him on pretty much every show. You've got to keep going with it. You've got to harness it because I don't think the matches are going to matter. I continue to think there's a US title run or an Intercontinental title run or just the Usos coming together. Maybe Jimmy doing that to sort of, he's wearing the No Yeet shirt and he rips it away to reveal a Yeet shirt.
Yeah.
And that just becomes an Usos thing when they're back together as a tag team. And then that squares away the bad matches issues because the Usos have good ones. And maybe you've got everything you need for it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. And the aftermath where he was like, don't beat the crap out of him.
Yeah.
Just more.
He's turning, isn't he?
So, he's fighting Finn Balor eventually for the title.
Yeah.
And that's going to be excellent.
Yeah. Last 5 minutes might get hot.
Let's talk about the Women's Tag Team Championship match.
It's not in a stadium. Oh, boy.
Bad news first.
Yeah.
I have no idea what was going on with that. Who's legal? You're not legal, but still tag in, tag out, legal. Who's legal? What's going on? Spots.
The referee won't count, if you haven't seen it, won't count Kairi Sane attempting to pin Jade Cargill.
I think so, yeah.
Because she's tagged out. This doesn't seem to get communicated between referee and wrestler. So then they apply a submission hold. And the referee is again saying, she can't submit. It's the same as a pin, in effect, if anything. Like, so then everything falls apart for a minute. Everyone seems to lose their place as a result of that, what that was ever supposed to be.
There was a spot they were clearly meant to do that they came back to.
Asuka.
Was that the double team spot? There was that bit where they sent her, Kairi saying, flying.
Yeah, like, it was a double team wheelbarrow into a backstabber where Bianca pumped her legs out and Kairi Sane just went flying into space. Asuka and Jade Cargill had a strike exchange that I can only compare to the video people shared of Tangaloa and Kazuchika Okada when they wanted to take the piss out of Tangaloa for signing with WWE. These piss weak strikes as they improvise something. Asuka's like, we're going to do this. I can't exactly smash you all over. And Jay's like, well, I'll sell anyway. They couldn't have looked like fish out of water. I thought I'd watch people forgetting how to wrestle in real time. It was brutal for it was probably only about 20 seconds, but you know, it always feels like about 2 hours. It's still happening. That bit of the match is still happening.
And yet, when I think back on this match in a week, 2 weeks, a month's time, I'll remember that Jay Cargill made a double crossbody look like the most lethal move in all of wrestling. And then the finish, the setup for that
I
was watching the match and I was like, oh, this is such a shame. Because we knew what was going to happen. We knew they were going to take the titles off the Kabuki Warriors. And I was like, this is such a shame because it's cast such a shadow over the match. And then they do that jaded spot. And I thought, oh, yeah, nothing matters. That setup was incredible. And Bianca Belair is now a triple crown champion.
That feels about right.
Yes.
Yeah. Raw, SmackDown, and the tag belts.
First title for Jade in the Fed, obviously.
This is it. Like a lot of.
Also, did you see Jay Gargle accidentally whip Bianca Belair with her own hair in the press conference? Yeah.
But again, I like seeing that stuff between them because they've got obvious chemistry. And this is smart pair the person you're not totally convinced about their in-ring with somebody that's pretty much the total package, and see if you get a second total package at the end of all this, and it just might work. Because to your point, like that incredible sequence at the end, I should point out, by the way, to give full credit to, if they devised this the first time around, she did that once before to, I think it was Sky Blue, but fortunately for WWE, it was on a Battle of the Belts.
So it's a bit like a
tree falling in the woods, isn't it? But obviously this idea, this sort of, that construction of that spot, it's maybe been in Jade's back pocket thinking, another day, another time, I'm dusting that one off again. People might see it this time, and they did. And I screamed at the telly. I honestly physically gasped at the bit when she, like, do this when Eric's a little bit older. This is a bit of an extension of Jackknife Your Kids, safely on a bed. Like, do that, like, you're picking him up. It's like, hey, and then just for a second, rather than the throw, do the little release and then capture again. Ah. And they go, whoa, and it's like...
He's just at the point now where he likes being thrown in the air.
Yeah.
But halfway through him being thrown in the air, he doesn't like being thrown in the air.
Yeah.
He's like, what the hell's happening? Oh, okay. That was quite bad to do that again.
Catch me. Go again. Whoa! Yeah, just forgets it each time. Yeah. The drop and then catch again is another pop entirely, because it's like, oh, I've walked into the danger zone here. Let's go again. Again. But that's what she does effectively with Kairi Sane. You think she's going to drop her, and it's a straight route to the floor. It's like, oh no, she's caught her again.
Perfect position. Yeah.
Incredible from the both of them. And as I say, look for it is Sky Blue. I think the Jade Cargill Sky Blue one. Go and check that out again. Somebody should. And it was just a perfect way to illustrate that maybe this is just a WWE thing. Aura wins. Like, that feeling that you're in the presence of greatness matters more than just about everything.
Yeah.
And you cannot buy it, and you cannot bottle it, and you cannot force it upon people. They've either got it, they haven't. And not everybody will, but they can earn your love and appreciation in different ways. Jade Cargill gets it like that. And I don't know if she can be stopped. Not that I want her to, but I think...
I can't wait till those two split. I'm not wishing it to happen anytime soon. But Bianca's going to have Jade Cargill's best match by a country mile.
That springboard was like seeing Sid do one. Mm. Like, Jade, like, she could have had the entire Damage Katarl.
Yes.
She's so tall that she could have covered the, like, all
do
of them.
Do that, actually. Full do extension. It. Do all four, yeah. Them, yeah.
But obviously, like, she's jacked. And it's like, the whole thing with Bianca Belair is like, she presents herself as, like, a six-tool player. Like, nobody's ever had everything that Bianca Belair does and offers. And that's the bar that they're making it seem like Jade Cargill is trying to reach. Well, that's awesome.
And in a tag team scenario, thank God we've got Bianca Belair out of there. Like, we've calmed her down. Oh, she's beaten down. Oh, no, she's got to a corner. And it's one of the greatest athletes this sport's ever seen.
This is the one thing we didn't want to happen. So, yeah, like what they've got, and like even more where this presumably ends by the end of the year.
Before we get to the main event, because I know you've got a lot to say about it, so I'm going to keep my thoughts relatively brief on that. Mm. You find it weird when they were like, well done, everybody. This is the highest grossing event we've ever had. I'm like, yay? I don't know. Do we cheer this?
Like, the crowd were buzzing, obviously, but I think it just got all of us, because they're like, highest grossing, did it, and had the attendance come up, so everybody's just doing the math. And it's like, what's he, we're charging like $350 a ticket, or euros, I guess, whatever. Thank you for making me do some last-minute ticket maths while the show's on. But well done to them. Well done, WWE.
Thank goodness, because those coffers really were running out.
This is it. I'm glad financially they're starting to turn a corner. Like, it does, the contrast, isn't it, of like that. They've just drawn their highest grossing gate ever in an arena in France. And we were talking this morning about that Raw taking place from the same building, a civic centre that once hosted WrestleMania 11 when the company didn't have water coolers. It's a strange old business. And that was when Diesel was on top and Jeff Jarrett at the Intercontinental title. Sometimes the people just don't know what they want.
They're going to Scotland. They're going to Germany.
Yep.
Like, this is going to be a mad few months.
Triple H, before he knackered it all up in the press conference, did the, I saw our friend, Mr. Khan, got re-elected, so we should talk sometime. It was a really, really weird and unsettling.
We are very biased because we're incredibly lucky to be able to travel to go to WrestleMania. Las Vegas next year, 10 days before your 40th, if I'm not mistaken.
You are not mistaken. I was rattled by anybody representing WWE putting over anybody on the political left. It's really, really jarring for a minute to be, whoa!
But
you don't know what you're saying, Paul.
Yeah.
You just want Wembley.
We just like going to America, basically. So we'll have a show, just not WrestleMania.
Yeah, I'll take a rumble, please.
Yeah, rumble.
A rumble. I want a rumble at the new White Hart Lane.
Ooh.
Because there looks like the beer tap thing is incredible.
Oh, the fast pour thing,
yeah. And they've got like really awesome looking screens and stuff like that. And the food will be of a higher standard than at Wembley.
Nice them to see titles as well.
That's one. That's one for the Spurs fans.
Right, let's get to the main event.
Are we going to win the league?
Probably not. Probably C. But we can dream.
They were gutted when they were heavily influenced by like sort of France culture.
Yeah,
that was a better time.
As were Newcastle. So let's not forget that.
I try to. Often.
Okay. Main event time then. Cody Rhodes versus huge babyface AJ Styles. I'm not going to talk too much about this because I know you adored it and I sense you've got a lot you want to say about it. The one bit I am going to mention, just in case you don't, was, and I'm going to be sensible here because I want to make more work for myself, was the Stardust reference followed by AJ looking at him and going, mother effer, for those just listening.
Stardust confuses AJ Styles and multiple counts because never really understood the character, not least because it like came from another galaxy. Like, what part of the line is there?
There was a burning hammer in this match as well, and a one kick out.
A kick out at one from a burning hammer.
And it's yell that echoed within us.
Ah! Same, hard same in every sense of the word.
Well, everyone was saying, weren't they? Oh, AJ Styles is Cody's first opponent. That's going to be bog standard title defense then.
Adam Nicholas called how good this is going to be.
He did say.
Of course he did. Always ahead of the curve, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got it. Backlash AJ Styles, basically. Yeah. Ahead of WrestleMania, the point when we were, maybe it was in that week where we thought The Rock was just getting the Roman match. And it's like, oh, great, everything's ruined forever. Cool. Like, I remember us having this conversation where it was like, Cody Rhodes.
Okay, he was going to drop the title immediately after WrestleMania.
He was going to surrender.
Not lose it, he was just going to drop it.
He was going to surrender it and leave. Come on, it would have
still called himself the people's champion, obviously.
I wonder where Dave Meltzer was getting that information. We talked about how Cody, it had to be Cody at WrestleMania. It had to be. Because, you know, like he had sort of, you could go down the line of every major company leading star / WrestleMania leading star, and he was all of them. Like the Americana throwback stuff of Hulk Hogan, the kind of like, not necessarily, Cody's not anti-authority, but like he has the people as like a working class hero in the same way Steve Austin did.
Yeah.
He's got that charm, like sort of almost like a certain Hollywood quality that The Rock brought to the table where you thought, if you just left all it, and Cody won, but if you left all this behind and just took up a new career entirely, you'd probably make a success of it. He had that. John Cena, like Cody Rhodes makes towns. Like in a way that it's probably makes him unpopular amongst his colleagues because John Cena set the bar seemingly impossibly high and Cody was like, I can leap over that. And he's the first person to really do that. And then like, not quite on a star on those level, but if you imagine WrestleMania and like Daniel Bryan we were using from WrestleMania 30, Bryan Danielson, like he's that sort of, that figure that just unites people that in another time, you'd be angry that they weren't getting behind. And it was like, but this is the other time.
Yeah.
Get behind him. And it looked like they weren't going to do it. He's all of those things. And I think at the time I thought, he's all of those things for this story, his words, capital S. He's all of those things for this moment and the rest of it. And I think what he's going to try and do is be all of those things in the match. Because AJ Styles was great here. And I don't want to take away the praise from AJ, of which I know he's been getting loads of over the weekend. But I almost think Cody Rhodes hasn't been getting enough praise here. Because he was all of those men in a match. And that's hard going. This was like really physically well worked in a way that you would expect Bryan Danielson to construct. Like a thriller that peaks with like two men that have hit each other with everything they've got. And then it's like, well, how much resolve have you got? How much aptitude have you got for this?
Mm-hmm.
What's your ability level? Because I think mine's higher. You know, so there was that sort of psychology from Bryan. The Burning Hammer one count is like Hulk Hogan and John Cena all day, but with the move that for years was like the ultimate band list. It was more so than like a tombstone. You don't use a Burning Hammer. There would be videos that we would make.
Yes.
Like at What Culture about the moves that you almost never saw. And that was one of them. And Cody's just firing up at one and Codying up. Like in the way that the crowd were permitted to just do the AJ Styles song, that we've, that sort of reaction, And I don't think the France crowd wanted to do this, but there would have been a time, not that long ago, where a WWE crowd doing that would have derailed the wrestlers because they were basically being forced to stick to one very rigid formula.
Mm. Wobbled them a bit on the go-home promo as well.
That's it. I was going to use that exact example. They had Cody, you could tell, had things he had to say before they like got out of there.
Too sweet.
Yeah, for the slap. And the fans didn't care. Like, you're then thinking, man, he's going out there and being super physical, and if these don't care, you're wasting your time and you're wasting your bumps.
Imagine if I said before that. By the way, this match is going to go 27 minutes.
I could have taken another 10.
Yeah.
Easily could have taken another 10. I was like, well, put him down with something else because I want to see how he gets out of that. That's perfect babyface pro wrestling from Cody Rhodes. In a title match that you would have bet your mortgage on him retaining.
Yes.
To get you halfway through the match. Not into thinking he was, and this is different, right? I don't think the emotional response to this was, I am rooting for Cody so he wins. It was, I want to see how he gets through this. Mm. It was the doubt was never that he was going to survive. It was like, how exactly is he going to power through this?
And there's a danger you have as well. I've sometimes had this when people are looking as they're heading towards, not that they've teased it, but look like you're like, okay, I've kind of everything I can take of this person as a babyface.
Yeah.
When you're like, oh, come on. Mm-hmm. Stop having him kick out of that and that.
Super
and
Cena,
that.
Roman wins all. Yeah. Like, this could... And look, maybe we're talking one defence, and I'm trying not to throw the baby out with the bathwater here and say that, like, oh, they've just completed all that. Like, tick, 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 like, it's done. Cody has solved the problems. He's not. It's a long road ahead for Cody Rhodes as WWE champion. But I think this start couldn't have gone any better, and it flew past my expectations, absolutely soared past them. I felt in this match like I should believe in Cody... Like, to get through the duration of this title reign, even if, like, because we'd reported on Friday, we report nothing. We aggregated on Friday that Cody Rhodes has no opponents, apparently, until The Rock, and no plans was the phrase that Dave Meltzer, again, I don't know who he was speaking to, but no big plans until The Rock and Roman Reigns were back. And you read that, and that's terrifying. Mm. Like, how have you not got this in mind? You were able to plan for a year when you didn't strap him up at WrestleMania 39.
It was like when WWE used to go, okay, well, that's that pay-per-view out of the way. There's another one.
Excuse me. I've never looked at my calendar. And then you sort of watch a match like this and you think, well, maybe that's not going to matter. No. Maybe they will.
No one buys he's going to drop the title anyway.
Maybe they'll judge who's getting over a period of a couple of months and like map out a long plan that involves opponent X at SummerSlam, opponent Y at Survivor Series. Indeed. But if somebody just feels like they're getting over as a big heel, you drop them in against Cody because he's going to give you a match like that. If you feel like you need a baby face to look like they're going to have the best night of their life and just fall short, Cody's going to give them a match like that. It made me feel like I can rely wholly on Cody Rhodes as WWE champion. And I think that was the one last little bit of his character that hadn't yet been fleshed out, because it couldn't be. Until he defended the title in front of your very eyes, you didn't know if you could back him.
Mm.
And I was ready to die for him. Like, I wasn't just ready, but I was like screaming as he screamed when he just like let out that almighty roar. I'm sure that maybe I've imagined this because I was just riding a high myself, but I'm sure they did the Rainmaker pull out when he put his arms out, because I was that like locked in to think, this man's a god. Like, in my head, that camera's just zoomed out and caught that huge...
That camera, which I forgot to mention, it was bouncing on several occasions.
It was the Nexus shake, wasn't it, from that famous pre-SummerSlam Nexus WWE thing, because the building was bouncing. Oh, man, I'm going to watch it again now we've spoken about it. It's my WWE match of the year.
Wow.
And, like, I know people loved Roman and Cody for the chaos towards the end, but I think in-ring this topped it.
Yeah, it was a brilliant end to a sensational show. And I like, a bit like the show, I'm surprised we've already got to the end of the review.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, we're done. That was great. Well,
unlike the show, we'll stick a load of adverts in this.
But yeah, French crowd, again, just absolutely unbelievable. Like people saying, it feels like this time last year, because people were like, cool, so Backlash is always going to be in Puerto Rico then.
Yeah.
Now people are saying, cool, so France gets Backlash every year now.
Yeah, there was a tease of a stadium show, wasn't there? Reminded me of like that, those Sky adverts that aired in the late 90s where there was just that lady going, Stade de France. And she sounded like she'd be on a Sash record. And it made me think, I want to see WWE at the Stade de France. Let's book it.
Just love this show. I'm going to go and watch it again.
France can have a rumble. You get a rumble. London gets a rumble. Everybody gets a rumble.
Imagine that. Because instead of 10 nights, you'd have 19, 8. So, C4 Energy, obviously. That's C4 Energy.
Le Rumble Royale. You know what they call a Royal Rumble in France?
Actually, royalty in France. But anyway, let us know your thoughts on Backlash France in the comment section below or on X at WhatCultureWWE. You can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. You can follow our brilliant producer at It's Adam Nicholas. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts. But for now, this has been the Backlash Review. My thank you to Michael Hamflett. Merci to you for watching, and we will see you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.